Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. The UFC schedule is officially in the books for 2024, folks. After Saturday's UFC Tampa, which was excellent, violent knockouts all across the board, including a bloodbath performance in the main event from Joaquin Buckley, who busted Colby Covington wide open above the eye en route to a third round doctor stoppage TKO. I mentioned it was a violent night in Tampa, and that honestly perfectly crescendos into today's podcast. And it's one I'd be looking forward to since I started the show about 3 months ago now. The time, my friend, has come for the first annual UFC All Violence Team selections here on the Bonfire. And joining me to do so will be none other than Laura Sanko, UFC commentator, and we are going to choose some of the most violent fighters from 2024 and overall in the weight classes. Kind of came at this from a different perspective, Laura and I, with our list here, but a lot of fun, a great discussion. This is a fun concept that I've been looking forward to, as I said, for quite a while now. So we will be back with Laura on the other side of a quick break. Before we get there, please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, and rate the program on whichever platform you are watching or consuming this on. I set a goal of 500 subscribers on the YouTube channel by the end of 2024, and we just soared past that with Luke Thomas on the show last week. A lot of you giving great feedback and tuning into that episode means the world to me. Love you all for the support out there, and let's keep pushing. Hope you all enjoy the show, and we'll be right back with Laura. And we are back here on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the show, someone who I have been eagerly anticipating their arrival here, Laura Sanko. Laura, thank you so much for being here for the first annual All Violence Team selections for the UFC.
You're so very welcome. I feel the coziness of the Bonfire. I'm warming my hands as we speak. I wish I had s'mores, but you know, we'll roll with what we got. I got some coffee. That'll work.
Love it. I know you're out there on the farm. Do you guys have like a nice fire pit or anything out there?
We do have a fire pit, and we're building a house with like a bunch of fireplaces. There's nothing I love more than cozying up to a fire. So there will be fire aplenty in the new place.
Love it. And before we get into making our team selections here, obviously we're wrapping up the year 2024, a big year for the UFC, yourself included. I know there was a lot of like new milestones you hit in 2023. 24 kind of felt like you just settling into those roles a lot. How did you feel about your year, like personally, goal-wise, all those things?
Yeah, you know, it was a really good year. I think you said it perfectly. Like the last, I don't know, three or four years prior to this year, it felt like a lot of like, gotta make this happen, striving for this, okay, check that off, you know. And there's kind of a hecticness to that can be a little bit, I don't know, it can be hard on the personal life and the psyche. Yeah. But so honestly, this year was just nice for it to be very, very normal. And like you say, settle into the roles and just be part of the team and not have it be like, oh, she's, you know, some big announcement, which was kind of always like the goal for doing that in the first place. Is it doesn't need to be, you know, first woman this, first woman that. Like, it should just be, yeah, she's here.
Yeah, definitely. No, you've settled in really well. Do you have a personal highlight from the year that really stands out?
Oh gosh, you know, this summer rip was really fun. Louisville was probably one of my favorites. Louisville and St. Louis, I really enjoy arena shows, and I really enjoy being able to call fights on the road like that. And I next year got some big ones in the plan. So next year should be another really fun big year. But I love the Apex. It's my home. There's certainly an easiness to working there because I'm just familiar with everything. Nothing surprises you. It's just, and I'm a very like, I like my routine type of gal. So there is a coziness to that, but I do enjoy the feeling of being in an arena. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's definitely a different energy for sure. And they had some great arena shows next year. And it seems like we're already, as we know, the Q1 schedule going to have some good ones. And then we'll see what happens as we get into Q2 and everything. Okay, Laura, let's get into the teams here. Before we get started, was there a hardest weight class for you to determine? There was a couple for me.
Yes, there were a couple for me as well. And honestly, some of the women's divisions were a little tricky as well. I've always said this about women's MMA. There's so much, apart from a few outliers, there's so much parity in women's MMA. It's part of what makes it exciting. It's part of what makes it really difficult to bet on if you're into that. you just kind of never know. So yeah, they were hard in a different way. Men's bantamweight was kind of tricky. Lightweight was tricky because it's like there's so many to choose from. And I kind of felt that way about featherweight as well, but we'll get to those.
Yeah, I think I had my most difficult time with heavyweight, actually. But we'll
really? Look at there. Yeah, that was a little tricky for a different reason. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I guess before we get started, shout out for this idea to my longtime friend, Jordan Breen. I don't know if you know who that is. He worked for Sherdog for years.
I know the name for sure, yeah.
Yeah, so he did this in the mid-2010s, and it's a really great idea, but he's kind of moved on from MMA doing different things with his life. So we have his blessing to kind of continue this on today. So there we go.
Cap over a decade later, not
of course. No, Jordan was one of my favorite people in the industry. Can't remember listening to Sherdog Radio with him and DJ DeSantis for hours, kind of coming up before I was a media member.
DJ. So
yes, a man.
That man is an encyclopedia.
He really is. I mean, he is one of the true OGs of the game when it comes to, you know, both media and working on broadcasts and things like that.
Yeah.
So hot tip to them. All right, Laura, here we go. The first annual All Violence Team selections. We will start at the bottom with the lowest weight women's sides, and then we will go to men. And I guess on the note of you mentioning the challenge of picking the women there, I think there was only 80 something women's fights in the UFC in 2024. I think that's the lowest since 2020. So that obviously gives you a less selection of people to pick from and performances. But here we go. Women's strawweight. I will give you the floor first, Laura. Who is your first team all violence selection for women's
strawweight? Well, thank you very much for letting me go first. That's very kind of you. I did struggle with this one a little bit. So I'm first going to give a tip of the cap, an honorable mention to Jillian Robertson. I think Jillian Robertson is an incredibly violent young lady when she gets her game going, the top control, the ground and pound. So I definitely, she was a strong consideration, but at the end of the day, when I weighed all the factors, I had to go with the champion Jiang Weili. I really did, because, and part of it was not like, at first I started thinking about who had like the most violent year, but this is just violence overall. So the history that Jiang Weili had, the fight with Joanna, obviously a Hall of Fame, you know, fight, the spinning back fist against Joanna the second time. She's incredibly violent. And what I love about Zhang Weili is even when she has like a grapple heavy approach in a fight, and I know that a lot of these women's divisions, you're not going to see just like 100% finish rate and things like that, that you see in some of the other men's divisions, there's still a lot of violence involved. And so I have to give it to the champ, which I realize is kind of like a homer pick. I'm going to have a few of those, but I debated, and I just couldn't give it to anybody else.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess just the one performance in 2024, but that fight with Yan Xiaonan at UFC 300 was very solid. You know, there was a potential choke out mid-fight, and then we got more rounds after that. So there
was I supposed to do just most violent in 2024?
If you want to, I mean, you can fold it in, but yeah, there's it was kind of going off the 2024 performances, but I think it still works here if you want to go with a lady.
Okay.
Zhang Weili. I think you can do it on the fly here. I think it still works.
And minor, a little bit more, just sort of like most.
That's fine. I think that's
current totally fighters fine. In the division. So I'm sorry, Mike. I really.
No, that's fine. I think we'll kind of have both angles of it here then. So that's all good. My selection was, we're sticking with China here. I think we're giving China the mad shout outs. I have to go to Ming Qi for that head kick knockout at UFC Macau. Yeah. I mean, that might have been one of the most brutal knockouts of the year, period. I think you were calling that fight, right, in Macau?
Yes. That knockout, listen, I was there for the Moraes Sterling knockout back in the day, and I thought that was one of the worst ones I'd seen. There's been a few others that I don't come to mind, but that one takes the cake. And not to be too gruesome with it, but like, she was out. For a solid 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was scary. And it's really awkward as a commentator to go from like, you want to celebrate the person who just did this incredible thing and give them all their, you know, their accolades and their shout outs and their phrases that were thrown around, especially since she's, you know, she's a doctor. There's so many puns you can go with, which we went with them all. And then obviously the severity of the situation starts to settle in. And that was, that was scary.
Yeah. Anytime you see someone get stretchered out, precautionary or not, it's obviously a concerning scene. But I mean, thank God going to butcher her name, Zhao Kan Fang, was okay after that. And, you know, we got to celebrate Ming, who was going around, you know, telling us that her parents don't even know she's an MMA fighter and that she's the doctor. Yeah, it was like she became one of my instant favorites with that. And yeah, I can't think of a more violent finish in 2024 from
adorable strawweight. See, now I understand where you wanted this to go. We're gonna have very different picks.
Oh, it's good. I like it. We have the dynamic of more year specific and then overall. I think this actually makes it more fun. So let's go.
Okay.
Okay, on to women's flyweight. I will take the first choice here. I know you mentioned a shout out to a Canadian in Julian Robertson. Love that. I will go with another Canadian for my pick here, Jasmine Jazz Davicius, 3-0 in the year, two finishes, first a Anaconda choke and then a Darce choke, both got performance of the night bonuses. She had a decision win, 30-27s over Katima Colleen. I might be messing up her name there, but yeah, that's another, didn't get the finish there, but dominant 30-27. So yeah, I'll give her that for the two submission wins by choke and then the two bonuses for it.
She was on my nod list. And again, since I was going big picture overall in the weight class currently, I did go with Valentina just because she leads the division in knockouts, and her style of violence, obviously her fights with Grasso have become much more careful. And so some people might be like, Laura, that's a terrible pick. I still would argue that her violence has a particular assassin-like surgical precision to it, right? There's, I don't know, as I was doing this exercise, it was kind of fun because there's different ways to think about violence.
Yep.
And the most obvious one is like blood and, you know, broken bones and all that type of stuff, which obviously that's the low-hanging fruit. But there is a more insidious type of violence that I feel like Valentina Shevchenko inflicts on her opponents. And it does come from her precision and her technical ability and the moments that she chooses to unleash. Like obviously the head kick of Jessica Ai is the one that's like replaying in my head over and over and over again. She's a very violent woman, and I'm still convinced that she might be some sort of agent for Russia. I don't know.
Yes. I mean, if you're looking at historically, obviously her win over Priscilla Cachoeira was one of the biggest beatdowns in UFC history. Oh. I think there was like a couple 10-8 rounds in there. So yeah, I mean, she's done her work. I know as you get older in age, she has more on the line. Maybe you become slightly more risk averse with your style, and especially, you know, you're fighting Alexa Grasso over and over. They know each other so well. It's harder and harder to do significant offensive damage to someone when you're that familiar.
I find that happens a lot when there's familiarity between opponents. You know, maybe the buildup and the rivalry gets bigger and bigger and bigger, but the fights themselves get a little less wild, right? And you might not see some of the spectacular finishes, kind of like with Shavkat and Ian Gary. I think that fight went the way it did because they were so familiar with each other, but I digress.
Yeah, totally agree. Great choice there. Another shout out, Gabriela Fernandez, her upset of Wang Kong, obviously had a knockdown and a choke out for it. So a little double dish of violence there. And I think that was the fourth biggest betting upset in UFC history. So
that,
a shout out for that.
That fight, I mean, it wasn't even just like the fact that she got the finish. The aura of Wang Kong coming into that fight, that whole fight week, the storyline of her having beaten Valentina, just the way she was walking around the hotel. Even I was like mesmerized by this woman. I was convinced she was absolutely going to murder this poor girl. So, I mean, that's what we love about MMA. You just never know. You never know.
Yeah, that was one of the biggest upsets of the year, definitely betting-wise. Huge stuff for her. Okay, Laura, to round out your women's team, I guess, women's bantamweight, I'll give you the floor first on this one. Which,
again,
are we going all champions here, Laura? Did you go
different? No. I have a few champions in my picks, but this one is not a champion yet. I'm going with Kayla Harrison. Now, Kayla Harrison in the UFC has not fully expressed the level of violence that she is capable of. But I have seen it firsthand. I called her Invicta fight with Courtney King several years ago. And it was the first time in her entire career that she was allowed to use elbows. And it was disgusting. It was a murder scene. It was hard to watch. And I'm kind of like waiting for her to have that fight in the UFC where she's comfortable, she's in control, and we get to see that side of her. Because having seen it firsthand, this woman is insanely violent when the opening presents itself. I don't think I've ever seen someone go ham like that on someone's face. And I don't know what the referee was doing, but there was so much blood. So much blood. She stood up and it was literally just like cascading down her entire face. I don't know if you ever saw pictures of that, but
yeah, I did. Was that fight, do you recall, was that fight at featherweight? Was that her?
It was. And it was, yeah, it was like a big deal at the time that she was even able to make featherweight. And we were, I remember talking to her and she's like, oh my God, I could never, this was so, so hard. I could never make bantamweight. So that's actually an interesting point that you bring up. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we will ever get to see the full expression of Kayla Harrison.
That was just going to be my follow-up question. Does she lose a little bit of that edge with that extra 10 pounds?
I do think that she does. I think that she also has to spend so much time of her camp focusing on diet and jogging and doing endless amounts of cardio and basically cannibalizing her own muscle mass that I don't know if we'll ever get to see what I saw firsthand, but I hope she has that, because I want the UFC fans to understand why it was such a big deal when she came in and just what an incredible combat sports athlete she is.
Mm-hmm. And I'd expect her fight with Juliana Pena to probably happen like early summer or something like that. So she should have lots of time. All the motivation in the world to do damage should be there for her, given the things Juliana has said. Yes. So if we don't get in this one, maybe we can come to a further conclusion about maybe what this is doing to her. So yeah, that is a great choice. My ones, it was a little difficult. This was probably my hardest women's weight class. I just went Norma Dumont, purely because of the cut she opened on Irina Aldana. I mean, does it get more violent than what we saw there? Like, that had to take the cake for me.
That's a fair, that is beyond fair. Yeah. it's funny how, like, when you look at this exercise through the different lenses that we did, you get really interesting results. Cause I almost forgot that it was Norma. I mean, I didn't forget the cut, but I almost forgot that it was Norma that did that to her. Isn't it crazy that that cut was allowed to continue pretty far, and then Colby's little nick above his eye was like, no, we're done.
I know. Yeah. The doctor's looking horrified. And I know Dana White said that, you know, this wouldn't have been stopped in Nevada. I guess that's true if we're basing it off Irina's, but Irina's cut definitely should have been stopped too. Yes. She said so herself. So I don't know where the middle ground is there of what Nevada would allow on that particular night. But yeah, that thing was traumatizing to say
somewhere between like a nick you might get shaving and full facial reconstructive is probably where we should land.
And it's amazing, go look at her Instagram profile. This thing looks like it pretty much shouldn't even happen at this point. Credit to the UFC, they send these people to the absolute best plastic surgeons.
She looks amazing.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
The other shout I had for women's bantamweight was just Macy Chison, purely because she had 2-0 with 2 finishes. I know the Myra Buena Silva one, speaking of cuts, she wasn't thrilled with, but nevertheless. And interesting stat I came across. Macy Chason was the only women's bantamweight to bonus in 2024. Not anyone else in this division got a bonus, and she got 2. So that's kind of interesting.
Wow, well, yeah, good for her. And that generally speaks toward a certain style of fighting and a very violent style of fighting. So yeah, good nod there.
There we go. Okay, on to the men's teams here. We will start at the bottom with flyweight. I'll go first on this one. This one was tricky for me, honestly. Based off the year, I went with Joshua Van, and he fought 4 times. Maybe this includes both sides of the coin for him, because his one loss was a knockout. So yeah. I guess he contributed to the violence there. But yeah, a little tricky. I mean, no finishes, but 3 decisions with significant strikes of 83, 67, and 118, 165 too in the most recent wins. So yeah, he's putting beatings on guys. They don't usually come out there looking unscathed by any means. Cody Durden was pretty beat up at 310. So yeah. I'll just kind of give that. It's harder to find, obviously, less knockout submissions, things like that at flyweight. So I would go with Joshua Van there.
Yeah, you're gonna be like, oh my God, what a lazy pick, Laura. But I am going with Alexandre Pantoja only because
that is a good choice even for 24.
I wanted to pick Kaya Asakura because of his highlight reel. It's ridiculous. The knees, the finishes, I mean, of course, allowed to do soccer kicks, you mm-hmm. know, in Ryzen. So it's hard to get his oh so violent highlight reel out of your head when you're thinking about these. But then I was like, yeah, but then he came here and Alexandre Pantoja took the violence to him, right? Like he walked right into the fire, was going toe to toe, cracking him just as much, ate the knees. And there is something to be said for like, kind of what you said a moment ago, when you're able to absorb the violence, it just creates more violence. Mm-hmm. So there's something to be said for Pantoja's style of fighting where he always has so much heart and ability to go deep into fights and just drag guys into some really dark, murky waters. And yeah, I felt like his fight with Kai was a particularly violent version of himself. And he's always been an incredible finisher in this division. So mm-hmm. that's why I chose him.
Yeah, no, he's been great. The Usyk fight was even entertaining and those guys beat each other up for 5 rounds, lots of good grappling and things like that. So yeah, Pantoja
didn't have flyweight.
Say it again.
Can you believe there was a time where we almost got rid of flyweight?
I know, it's crazy to think. And now they headline 2 pay-per-views this year. Yeah. I mean, if you don't have that champion there that's reliable, what do you do on some of these spots? So yeah, it's I'm glad to see the reinvestment coming into it. And I think we're starting to see that like pay into fruition. It's just looking unbalanced right now because Pantoja is so dominant that it looks like everyone else is just a level below in the division isn't pulled out because he's beat all these guys multiple times already.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. Okay, on to bantamweight. Who did you pick there?
So I picked Piotr Jan in this division. I might have a little bit of recency bias since I called his fight with Figueiredo. There's just something about the way that he operates in a fight that is very predatory. And it's almost like we always talk about his defense and his guard. Like that's kind of the thing we always go to his comment. And it is a good thing to talk about, but it's almost like because his defense is so good, he's able to focus singularly on what he wants to do offensively. And he just has this like animalistic, I'm going to corner you. And then I'm going to start having my way with you. And the head kick of Uriah Faber sticks out. The ground and pound against Jose Aldo was another thing that I just could not get out of my head when I was thinking about Piotr Jan. So he's like a predator that will take his time and never make a wild mistake. He's not like a crazy go out there and take too many risks type of guy, mm-hmm. but he will systematically destroy you, take you where you don't want to go, and then get incredibly, incredibly violent with it. So that's who I picked.
Yeah, and he had a violent year as well. I mean, beating Song Yudong the way he did with all the injuries too. And then the Figueiredo fight was great. You know, getting a knockdown, all that stuff. He was lesser people he would have knocked out on that night. So 100%. I think that's a great choice, even for 2024. He had a spectacular year. And he was honestly my honorable mention as well, Laura.
Oh, so good, good. You're
not far off by any means.
I love how you're like, even though you didn't do anything I asked you to do for this show, Laura, it's still an okay
fit. I'm actually enjoying this a little bit more. It's giving like the year rundown versus the overall, and I think some of your choices even fit in perfectly to the year, so I don't think you're really too far off track here by any stretch, Laura.
Right,
so, don't feel bad by any means here. My pick for bantamweight was Vinicius Oliveira, Loke mm-hmm. dog. I mean, the knockout of Bernardo Sapage wins it purely off that. He had another fight, it was a decision, but that flying knee KO, if not for someone we'll probably discuss later, Max Holloway delivering the knockout of the year, the century, whatever you want to call it, this flying knee probably wins KO of the year. And he got a rare double bonus fight of the night and performance of the night. So what more can you really ask out of a violent night from him? That KO was just so vicious against the fence, face plant, brutal stuff.
Sometimes the violence is in the way that the opponent falls. Mm-hmm. Like it adds to the moment. The strike or whatever it was, the submission is its own version of violence. And then it's like the result just makes it even crazier and bigger. And sometimes the way people fall is just like, oh my God.
Yeah. Do they go out, you know, same with the submissions, do they go out from the choke? You know, what position are they in? Are they left face down? All these different things that add to kind of the appeal. Before we move on from this division, just to circle back to Piotr Jan, what do you think they do with him next in 25? We got the title fight in January. From what I've heard, Corey Sandhagen has something in the works that is not him, a rematch there. So that takes him out of the equation. Do you think it has to be the Sean O'Malley rematch?
I like that. I think it should be the Sean O'Malley rematch because that fight was so closely contested. It was controversial for a lot of people. And I know that that's one that he personally would very much like to get back. So yeah, I would love that fight.
Yeah, me too. I think that would be great and definitely a title eliminator for both.
Yep.
On to the featherweight division, Laura.
I'm so excited. Can you hear the mowers outside of the leaf blower?
No, I can actually.
So okay, good. Because yeah, that's all I can hear. It's great.
Okay. Do you need me to speak up or are we good?
No, I'm good. I'm good. I just feel bad for people listening.
No, you're good. It sounds fine on my end. So hopefully right. For the listeners out there as well. Okay, on to your featherweight choice.
Okay, so featherweight. Featherweight, I had to go with, you know, what's really funny? I'm actually going to go with Max Holloway on this, but I meant to, it's still the right choice. It's still the right choice. But of course, the fight I'm thinking about was against Justin Gaethje, which is not a featherweight.
So this is where my choice will come in. Interesting. Do you want to reconsider here? I mean, I think the easy choice, this one to me was the layup.
The easy choice is Ilya Topuria, right? The easy choice is Ilya. So maybe I should reconsider. I'll put Ilya Topuria on my featherweight list because it really was between the two of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Knocking out Alexander Volkanovsky, crazy. Absolutely crazy. And then to go out there and knock out Max Holloway. He literally blew up half of the featherweight Mount Rushmore in 1 year. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, is the definition of violence. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you say? He called the shots. He said that's how he was going to beat both guys. He went out there and did it. The Max Holloway one, still shocking to us all. Ends a streak of 29 UFC fights without being knocked down. I don't know if that's a record that'll ever be broken. Maybe John Jones if he fights that many times, but I don't know if we're getting another 5 fights out of John Jones. So, that one will stand for a while. Just incredible stuff, Ilya Topuria.
And did it without, like, even ruffling his hair.
Exactly. Like it's all offense. So offensively gifted, that guy.
And he's just so put together. He's so chic and slick and, like, you know, he's done with a fight and he might have a little schwitz, but that's about it. I mean, the man is, it's crazy how slick of an operator he is while being incredibly violent.
Yeah, great choices. My honorable mention went to Cub Swanson. Purely, he gave us 2 fight of the nights in 2024, which I think only one other person did, who I will get to. So to do that twice at 41 years old, I mean, he won one, lost one, but still up there, you know, no one else has done that. So he gets an honorable mention there. And I don't know, what do you think? Just to talk on him, I gave this theory because I don't know. If you heard his media day leading into this, he was talking about like what his motivation was to keep fighting at this point. And he basically said, I want to show the fighters I manage at Bloodline, his company, like how to do a career, right? Like you tell them to do all these things on Fight Week, a training camp. It's one thing to show them. It's another thing to one thing to tell them, another thing to show them. And then he goes out there and delivers that performance. And then debates walking away. Is there a better way to set an example for your group of fighters than to show them when to walk out, like on a high, on a bonus, on a great knockout, like when your wife and your kids are there? That just felt like there's no better example if that is your main motivation to show the next generation.
I mean, you just said it best. That to me is the best. I'll just be honest. I wish he would have done it in the moment, in the octagon with the visual of putting his gloves down, with the moment on the microphone. I wish, because I want all of those things for him, right? He deserves all of that. When he came to the post-show desk, he seemed like he was closer to saying it. I don't know if you saw the post-show interview we did with him, but he was so close to saying it. We played like a little package of some of his greatest highlights. And, you know, we were talking about just his career overall and, you know, his life overall too, where he came from as a troubled teen and, you know, how the sport saved him. And the sport not only saved him from a path he was going down in his young life, but then it brought him, he met his wife, you know, and now he's got his kids and he's got students and he's got, you know, a management agency. Like that MMA literally is his life and he built that. And talking about it, he got pretty emotional and he all but said that he was retiring, but he didn't quite you know, feel like he could say it. I wish he would have said it in the octagon. Yeah.
Yeah, me too a little bit. But if he was just going to come back in 6 months, at least I would rather him take however long he needs to actually come to the decision so we don't undo this.
Yeah, but Mike, it doesn't get better than that.
I know.
Trust me. Down. Like, are you going to knock someone? I mean, he could, I guess. But this is a crazy game. Like, you can't count on a better walk-off knockout moment than that, and that's why we love Cub. He can do what he wants. It's not up to us, but it's like, it's not gonna get better than that
for sure. I totally agree. Before we exit featherweight discussion here, yes or no quickly, is Ilya Topuria's next fight at featherweight?
You said quickly, and here I am pausing for a long moment.
Maybe it takes
What do I really think about this? I think it is, only because I think it is. He's gotta like defend in that division personally. I'm just not a big fan of like, got the championship and now we're just gonna like willy-nilly go all over the place. I like the guys who defend the castle, and that's where I feel like you build even more of a legacy. Everybody wants double champ, triple champ, and I get that is rarefied air. Mm-hmm. But you know, the Demetrius Johnsons of the world, to me, are the true kings of their division.
Agreed. Yeah, title defenses to me mean more than the double champ stats, but we'll see as this goes on for him. My gut feeling is yes, it will be. His next fight will be at featherweight. I think he defends, especially if they get Spain done. You have to have him with the belt on the poster, all that stuff.
Right? How could you not? And you know, Dana's dying to go to Spain. It's just a matter of the logistics. So
yeah, I think we all are. We'll be calling dibs on that show. That's for sure.
I have a feeling I'm not going to get that assignment because there's just people way higher on the pecking order that are like, nope, I got dibs.
Yeah, I feel you. Okay, on to lightweight here. Well, you alluded to him already, Laura. This is going to be my choice for lightweight. Max Holloway has to be, especially if we're talking 24. There was no more violent moment than what he did to Justin Gaethje at UFC 300. Even before then, breaking his nose with the spinning back kick, just the way he was beating him up, and then to close the fight with arguably the greatest knockout, the greatest moment in UFC history. I will never forget being there cage side and just watching that final 10 seconds to play out and Gaethje falling on his face and the arena just completely imploding.
When you watch from the media area, are you watching on a screen or do you watch the octagon action?
I watch the octagon action as much as possible. The only time is if it's like on the opposite side of the cage and they're grappling and someone's back is against you, then you'll kind of look up at the monitor. But yeah, other than that, I try as much as possible to look at the cage. But it can be difficult sometimes. But when you're that close, it's much easier than if you're in the crowd.
Yeah.
Because I know a lot when you're just watching as a fan, your eyes are kind of naturally taken to the screen.
That had to be, I was there, but I was in the back. That had to be in the arena, the most electric feeling. I mean, to me, it is the greatest knockout in the history of the UFC. And there's some good runner-ups. But to me, that one takes the cake because of largely how the fight played out before that, because of who they are, because of what both of their careers have looked like and how violently both of them have operated individually, then to come together and in the last moments of a fight like that, with that particular title on the line, like that, you don't get better than that. And then he is also my choice. Yeah.
Yes, one of the layups in my mind, just a ridiculous knockout. I don't know what more you can say about it. I guess a couple honorable mentions that I threw out at lightweight. Dustin Poirier, I mean, he's always in the mix, but I think he was the only other fighter besides Cub Swanson to have two fight of the nights, also won one, lost one, but vicious knockout of Saint Denis, the Makhachev fight. I mean, I guess he was on the receiving end of the violence there from tapping and then being choked out. So yeah, he gave us it all. I mean, this guy is probably penciled in somewhere on the list. If we were to do a second team, he'd probably be there for you. So I don't know how you beat what Dustin Poirier always brings to the sport. And my other shout out before I let you speak on Dustin a second, Ignacio Bahamundez, two first round knockouts, two bonuses. So he gets a little shout out for that.
Lightweight, because of the way that I looked at it, lightweight was like, I mean, you could literally just blindly do this to the list and you'd have the right answer, right? I mean, Dan Hooker, Justin Gaethje, Dustin Poirier, Renato Moicano, like he had what he did to Drew Dober was disgusting.
That's a very good call.
Benoit Saint-Denis, a very violent guy. Like this is a division where you could basically just blindly throw a dart and you'd have the right answer.
Yeah. I mean, if Justin Gaethje did another fight, if we still had Eddie Alvarez, all these guys would still be in there. I mean, they created kind of this, this violence weight title. I think it was once called before the BMF was truly brought into place. So yeah, great choices there. Okay. On to welterweight. Laura, I'm curious who you picked here, because this was my easiest choice.
So I'm going to guess that you're going to guess that I'm going to pick Shavkat Rakhmonov, which I was very close to doing, because the man is violent and he finishes fights. And that, to me, the finish of the fight, no matter what's happened leading up to it, is the most important criteria in violence, I guess. But I did not pick Shavkat.
Wow. Okay.
I picked Carlos Prates.
Yeah,
because not only does he get the finishes, but the pathway to the finish is riddled with violence, even more so than Shavkat. The way that Carlos Prates operates is like he's doing his taxes. He is so unbothered by what is happening. But what is happening is that he is throwing elbows and knees and he's sniping guys. And when I, you know, when I talk about MMA and everybody's like, oh my God, it's such a violent sport. And here we are celebrating the violence. But my normal go-to is to say it's not really true violence, because true violence is when one person does not want to be there.
Sure.
And there's a perpetrator and a victim, right? And that's not what this is. This is a sport. This is competition. Both men or both women want to be there. But when you watch Carlos Prates fight, you kind of feel like someone doesn't want to be there at some point. So this is like true violence.
Yeah, that's a great one to me. That was the layup choice. I mean, how do you get better than a 4-0 year with 4 knockouts and 4 performance of the night bonuses? It says it all. Yeah. I might make you pick a team captain at the end of this. He's probably my team captain. He might be hard to beat here, but holy cow. Yeah, this was... I think he'll be most people's like breakthrough fighter of the year, newcomer of the year. To do all this in your debut year as well is pretty spectacular. So yeah,
while smoking a cigarette.
I was just going to get to that. I mean, you got to give the extra bonus points for that. I mean, this is clearly just his natural way. He's not doing anything that feels out of his normal expression. This is just the kind of guy he is, and setting himself up for a huge year. Laura, what would you have done if he was not healthy, or if he was healthy and they ended up doing him versus Shavkat at 310? Because that was one of their options before they went to Ian Garry.
I mean, I would have been very nervous. Yeah. I would have been very nervous. I listen. And the truth is, like, obviously, as much as I love Shavkat, I'm never really like rooting for one person, truly, because I'm a huge Carlos Prates fan as well. That would have been an insane fight. That would have been a crazy fight. But yeah, definitely one I would have been on the edge of my seat for. Imagine if Shavkat finished Carlos Prates, though. Like, that's a real possibility. Maybe we'll see that fight at some point.
I think we see that in 26 or 27, given both these guys' trajectories and the turnover we're getting at welterweight. Definitely in play. Okay, middleweight. Who do you got?
I went, you know, scope. So I went with Khamzat Chimaev. And not even a bad choice necessarily for this year, because what he did to Robert Whittaker
great choice for this year.
Was horrific to look at. And it's so funny, because in the moment when he did that, I was like, he just broke his jaw. There's something about the way that Robert reacted. And I've seen it happen before. Elsie Davis had something, it wasn't from a submission, but Elsie Davis had something similar happen where all of the bottom teeth like completely caved in. And it's, to me, there's something about teeth injuries that really, like, I can handle a lot of violence and cuts and ears falling off and stuff like that. But there's something about like a bunch of teeth caving in that's just like,
it's something you can definitely like organically feel yourself, right?
Yeah.
You'd be like, this could happen to me. I mean, Irene Adana's cut. You're like, oh, there's a lot of situations I'd put myself in where that would never happen to me. But, you know, you hit your face in the wrong way. Everyone's very sensitive to their teeth. So.
Yeah. And also just going beyond this year, you know, I'll never forget him picking up Li Jingliang like a sacrificial offering to Dana White and just like carrying him over there and be like, here, boss, you want this?
Yep. And you look at his middleweight offerings. I mean, the 18-second KO of Gerald Meerschaert, who we know is endlessly tough. He's had some great work at middleweight. But yeah, the Whittaker one, given the competition, given the way it ended, the photo one, I think that is a great choice. And he was a very like very close number two on my list, the honorable mention. Like, I don't think any slight if you pick him there. I went with Anthony Hernandez, actually. More of a grappling heavy style of violence here, but Michelle Pereira, that win, I think he had like two 10-8s, one that borderlined on a 10-7 there. So like that doesn't happen very often. Probably could have been stopped at multiple points. You talk about people who make someone look like they don't want to be in there. Michelle Pereira by the end of that fight definitely didn't seem like he wanted to be there. And then Roman Kapilov, a respectable middleweight as well, he took him out and submitted him. So I thought he was the choice. I wanted to add a little grappling diversity in there. So whether it's Khamzat or Anthony, I think that was good. If you want to do something at middleweight more on the striking side, Shara Bullitt, of course, was
definitely was on my honorable mention list for sure.
Okay, on to light heavyweight. I would be shocked if we, I guess, don't have the same answer here. Alex Pereira felt like the layup choice. I mean, what can you say? 3-0, 3 KOs, 3 title defenses, 2 bonuses, but I think really 3 bonuses because I think he said Dana gave him the 300K for UFC 300 in the locker room. Shout out to this guy for setting those up. But
Yes!
There you go. So. Yeah.
You should be getting a cut, my friend. You should be getting some kickbacks from these fighters. You're 10%.
As long as they just pick up the phone when I call for an interview or something, that's enough for me. But yeah, Alex Pereira, what can you say? He might be team captain nominee as well. He did it all in 2024.
He absolutely should be a team captain nominee. And to knock out UFC career-wise, 6 former champions. Mm-hmm. That's what's crazy to me is like, it's not just like he had a bunch of knockouts when he first got to the UFC and then he kind of reached an echelon where things got, you know, a little bit harder to operate and to really showcase his violence. Champions, time and time again, just like a wake of bodies behind him. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, not too much more to add. He gave us all sorts of highlight reels in the biggest spots with the highest stakes. Violent personified Alex Pereira, Poton, legend. Okay, heavyweight. This one was real tough for me, Laura. Like, I don't really know what to say, especially if you're going off 24. There was not a lot of people who even fought more than once. I think only 5 fighters bonus period at heavyweight, which is a little surprising given the knockout potential there. This was kind of a late add given he wasn't a heavyweight for 80% of the year, but I went with Kennedy Njuku just because he had 2 fights, 2 knockouts, 1 bonus. That's enough to qualify you. You could put John Jones's 1 win, given the violence of that kick on Stipe, to see him rolling around in agony like he was.
Yeah,
that was pretty high up there. But yeah, this one was tough for me. Not going to be my team captain, even though they will be the biggest in physical stature. But I went with Kennedy.
If Tom had been a heavyweight for most of his career, I would have put him like beyond, I mean, no one would ever dethrone him, you know, in this division of like all time greatest, most violent fighters. If we were doing in the history of the sport, who's the most violent fighter ever, it would be John Jones because of the way that he finished fights early in his career. And I did almost think about putting him because of the finish with Stipe, but I did go with Tom again. Not based on 2024, just based on the way that he's operated in this division since he's been there. And really his entire career, even previous to the UFC. A 100% finish rate, obviously the only loss coming due to a freak injury that wasn't even caused by his opponent. Went back, avenged that loss violently. And he's a guy that every time you watch him fight, you can't take your eyes off of it because a knockout can and will come at any second. And what's crazy to me is that we haven't even really seen very much of what is supposedly his best martial art, which is his jiu-jitsu. So that to me is like, there's so much more yet to unpack with Tom Aspinall, but we can't get to it because he's just so powerful and knocking guys out.
Yeah, it's incredible. Shortest average fight time in UFC history. That goes to show what he does to guys in there. And even if he went off the 2024 work alone, Curtis Blaydes finishing him the way he did, you know, in that rematch where you could mention maybe the mental obstacles he had coming back from the injury against that same guy, he creamed him in there. So that was a huge win for Tom. And yeah, that rounds things out, Laura. Okay, this is your team here. I'll read it back to you. Heavyweight, Tom Aspinall. Light heavyweight, Alex Pereira. Middleweight, Khamzat Chimaev. Welterweight, Carlos Praches. Lightweight, Max Holloway. Featherweight, Ilya Topuria. Bantamweight, Piotr Jan. Flyweight, Alexandre Pantoja, women's bantamweight, Kayla Harrison, women's flyweight, Valentina Shevchenko, and women's strawweight, Zhang Weili. Who is your team captain? Are you naming who is the most violent of the most violent?
I have to go with Alex Pereira. Yes. I have to go with Alex Pereira because of the knockouts and because of the level at which he does those knockouts. I think Carlos Prates is a team co-captain, if there is such a thing. And once he gets to that echelon, you know, top one, top two, top three, and he's still doing what he's doing, that he could potentially dethrone Alex Pereira. But right now I got to go with Alex.
A great choice. Yeah, I think that was a great team there. Just to run down mine quickly before I let you go. Heavyweight, Kennedy Njuku. Light heavyweight, Alex Pereira. Middleweight, Anthony Hernandez. Welterweight, Carlos Prates. Lightweight, Max Holloway. Featherweight, Ilia Topuria. Bantamweight, Vinicius Oliveira. Flyweight, Joshua Van. Women's bantamweight, Norma Dumont. Women's flyweight, Jasmine Jazz Davicius. And women's strawweight, Ming Shi. And I will agree with you that Alex Pereira, team captain. I mean, just the level, the opponents, all that stuff that we went over. So yeah, that was a great choice here, Laura. I think that worked out well. I actually like the dynamic you brought here. And I think your team even works as a 2024 team. I think the only one that I might give a boot is Valentina, just given
her
one fight. But nevertheless, I give it to her on her history as well.
I appreciate you being flexible with the rule set here. Now we just have to start one of those crazy MMA promotions where all of these people fight in like a giant arena at the same time. Like your team versus my team, 20 minutes, no rounds, scored as a whole, just whoever's left.
Free for all brawl, we'll call it. Okay, I love it. You'll be on the call for this? Or are you going to referee? Or are you matchmaking? How are we doing?
Oh, God, that would be a really hard fight to commentate.
You'd need a lot of angles, but maybe we're giving UFC too many of our ideas here. Someone else out there might steal it. You never know. Okay, Laura, I appreciate you being here so much to run this over. I know it took a little bit more time than I promised, but appreciate you doing this. And hopefully maybe next year we circle back, see if anyone stayed, see if anyone went, see if anyone can repeat, and see if we can do this again. I hope you have a great holiday break, Laura. It's well-deserved for everyone in the industry. This is kind of our version of the off-season, even though it doesn't last long. So thank you for everything you did this year and for being here, and keep up the great work.
Thank you for all the work that you do. You help me do my homework most weeks. I go to those media day interviews. I always know it's your voice. And thank you from the fighters. I'm not one of them, but I will thank you for them for the added bonuses that you got them this year.
Okay, Laura, I appreciate it. I will take a quick break and then be back to wrap things up. And that does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thanks so much to Laura for joining the show. Those are your all violence teams for 2024. Hers a little bit different in the overall scheme of things. Maybe my fault for maybe not being as clear with the assignment as I should have been. But I thought Laura had some great answers and some great perspective here. And I thought both of our teams had a lot of warranted names and justifiable names and a nice run down memory lane and overall in the history of the divisions between our two lists here. So we'll see you back here next week for what will be the penultimate episode of the Bonfire for 2024. A very, very special guest coming to you. You will not be disappointed with this one. It is as good as it gets. Big tease there, but dare I say, the most credentialed guest we've had on the program so far. And I will leave it at that as far as the tease. Appreciate you all for listening. Hope the coming weeks of the holiday season treat you all well in whatever form you are celebrating, and I'll see you back here next week